Dr. Michael Parsons, and Justice Tom Phillips. Is he here? Yeah, there he is. And then I would like to introduce Mr. Joe Arms, who's the chair of the search committee, and he will introduce the members of the search committee.
Great. Thank you, Georgia. Thank you for joining us today. We're very pleased and gratified that you would take time out of your very busy schedules to spend some time with us to share with us your thoughts and your input and your aspirations for Baylor's next president. We are fortunate to have a number of the regents who are members of the Presidential Search Committee here with us. I'll start down here. We have Wes Bailey, a local Waco businessman who is here. We have Bobby Dagnall, pastor at First Baptist Church in Lubbock. We have Sue Getterman, who I always say needs no introduction in Waco, especially to softball fans. We have Pastor Romero Pena. We have Gary Elliston from Dallas. And we have Pastor Stan Alcorn from Pioneer Drive in Abilene. So we're very grateful for their time and commitment to be here, some of which have traveled good distances. And I will go ahead and apologize at the outset that Mr. Bailey and Mr. Alcorn are going to have to leave a little bit early. They have travel schedules to be out of town, and so we'll excuse them before the end. Thank you, Georgia, for organizing this, for sponsoring this, for allowing us this opportunity and helping to schedule this. We're looking forward to the conversation, and I just wanted you as faculty members to know that these members of the advisory committee, in particular representing the faculty, are representing your interests quite well. It will be no surprise to you that they're providing strong leadership and thoughtful input already in this process. And so we're all blessed to have them, and you're blessed to have them as your advocates. I would also like to say a word of thanks to all of you as faculty members here at Baylor. Obviously, there is no university without the faculty. You touch the students, and you create the new knowledge that makes Baylor the great academic institution that it is. And we're so grateful for you, for your commitment, for your willingness to partner here with us at Baylor. And so thank you for all that you're doing. You have you alone have the task of forming and informing the minds of our Baylor students. So we're grateful for you and for all that you do. And just as a personal bias, I'm persuaded that there's no faculty anywhere that does a better job than the Baylor faculty. So congratulations and thank you. Now, our sessions are intended to be listening sessions, and we would like to hear from you. We have the time allocated. We have given you some prompts on the website, and I believe you have a copy of the questions that we have provided. There is no requirement whatsoever that you stick to those. They're just intended to be a tool or a help, and obviously they may be more effective on the website than they are in a meeting like this. But we would like to hear from you about the personal qualities and characteristics, professional qualities and characteristics that you would expect and that you would like to see in Baylor's next president. We would also like to have your input and your wisdom with respect to the experience that the next president would need to help face the challenges and accomplish all that we hope to accomplish at Baylor over the next few years. And then lastly, what distinctive qualities or characteristics regarding Baylor should we be... There we go. Articulating and expressing to the community. We believe that the search itself will provide a great opportunity. Will provide a great opportunity to market Baylor University to a very broad cross-section of folks across the country. And so when we have the opportunity to say Baylor University is and complete that thought, we think that's a very important opportunity and something that we need to take advantage of. When we have a chance to say Baylor University is seeking and describe the person that we're seeking, we think that's a wonderful opportunity with thought leaders, influential people across the spectrum in the United States, but particularly in higher education, that we'll have an opportunity to tell our story and to brag on Baylor a little bit. So we're looking forward to that as well. From a matter of process, we just want you to know that we are coming to you early on in the process. This is the first day of listening sessions. We've held two earlier today, one with staff, one with the executive council. This is the first of our truly open forums for faculty.
We'll hold another open faculty forum for faculty, and then we'll have other meetings with students and alumni groups as well in the Waco community and others. We want you to know that we have decided to gather your input and to try to collect all the information that we can before we create a profile, before we describe the job, before we create an ad for the newspapers or anything like that. This is intended to be input gathering the input so that we can create a profile, so that we can create a job description, so that we can create a list of attributes or the things that we would like to see in our next president. So this is very early on in the process. We need and we want your input, and we will benefit from your wisdom. And so with that, again, we're here to listen. I had brought a card I'm carrying around with me through this process. Proverbs 12:15 says, "The way of a fool seems right to him, but a wise man listens to advice." So we're here to listen, and we want you to share with us your wisdom and your input. And there's no formal way to do this, so be bold.
Blaise Pascal once wrote a letter of exceedingly great length and apologized for its length by saying, "I did not have time for a short one. Perforce, mine will be short because I have a 2:00 class." I want to make 2 points, make them as clearly and sharply as I can, and sit down. The first is that I hope the next Baylor president that you folks bring to us will be a person of very large vision. And I know that's a gassy word that doesn't seem to specify much, but in my estimate, it really does. I mean by it two things. First of all, I hope the new president will envision Baylor not merely as a state or even regional university. We really have moved on to the national and indeed the international scene. Everywhere I go on the lecture circuit, Canada, the Midwest, and so forth, people are talking about Baylor now as a major player in American academic life. And for that reason, then, I think we need to be careful that we have a president who has that very large vision of Baylor as not simply local, state, or regional. Along with that political and geographical vision, if I can speak in those terms, the person needs to be also a very large religious vision. And I mean by that, again, that Baylor is always has been, and I hope always will be, a Baptist university in the Christian tradition. It seems to me those last four words must not be lost. And again, I mean by that, we have a truly ecumenical student body, the second largest group of Roman Catholics. We have a huge enrollment of evangelicals who go to churches of no particular denominational stripe. And so my hope is that the next president will be a person of ecumenical vision, who sees our place as a Baptist university within the larger world of Christendom, that is to say, of the universal church. My second large point is that I hope the next president will carry forward Vision 2012. That, above all, is what has made Baylor into a national, internationally recognized university. It's been endorsed, as you know, by the Senate. It's been endorsed by the Board of Regents. And it has turned Baylor into a seriously, confessionally Judeo-Christian graduate university. There are plenty of other small Christian colleges that do very well, but there is no major research university that is confessionally Christian than Baylor. And that's what makes this such a very exciting place. I came to Baylor from Wake Forest, where I taught 26 years, a school that's now broken into the top 25 in the U.S. News and World Report ranking. I think at last count we were 72. But I can assure you Baylor is a much, much more interesting place to be, to work, to teach, to have colleagues, and to live out the academic life. And it is so because here we are able to integrate our faith in our learning. These are not separate spheres that we keep at arm's length. We integrate them in 1,000 different ways, but that's the heart of Vision 2012. its mandates need to be all filled and indeed extended, because that, it seems to me, is the trajectory that will continue to make Baylor a really great Baptist university in the Christian tradition. And I thank you very much for hearing me out.
Yes, and that was, of course, Dr. Ralph Wood. But if you would, please let us know who you are when you are speaking. We will appreciate that very much. Probably know your names. Might not recognize the face. Who else?
I'm Bob Baird. I'm a member of the philosophy department here at Baylor. There are all sorts of thoughts that come to my mind when I think about our new president. Let me just mention two, and as the afternoon progresses, who knows, I may be back up here. But the first of the two has to do with the notion of collegiality. That's a term that is used so often in a university, collegiality. What it means as an ideal is that the administration, the faculty, the staff, and the students see themselves involved in an enterprise that requires a cooperative spirit. When I refer to my students, I often refer to them, in fact, it's to the point where I think I now always refer to them as young colleagues. That's what they are. They are young colleagues involved with me in our quest to understand the world better than we now understand it. And my genuine hope is that the new president will have a collegial spirit, will be very concerned to engage the faculty in conversation about the direction of the university. So while to talk about collegiality sometimes sounds like a cliche, it seems to me absolutely crucial to seek a new president who has collegiality as part of his or her mindset. A second observation. I've been at Baylor a long time. We certainly have made a major transition here. We have moved from being an institution primarily concerned with teaching to an institution that now values research. And let me emphasize that Baylor always valued research and publication, but it has taken a different turn. It used to be the case, as President Herbert Reynolds put it, research and publication was appreciated. It was over and above what you were expected to do, and what you were expected to do was to focus in a quality way on teaching. Well, we certainly have made a transition, and I just think we all have to acknowledge that now we are both a teaching and a research institution. But what I hope is that in the focus on research and publication, which has certainly become a valuable role for this university, we do not leave teaching behind. I think Baylor has always played such a crucial role in affecting the lives of our students, and as I look at that table up there, I see several of you who, in fact, were my students at one time, and I'm convinced that you have appreciation for the role Baylor can play in the lives of students as we focus on teaching. We can't turn the clock back. I'm not suggesting that we do that, and I myself have certainly appreciated the increased opportunity I've had to do research and to publish. But I remember having a conversation with a former student of mine who got a PhD at an outstanding university in this country and was interviewing for a position at another outstanding university. And he told me they made clear to him in his interview that they didn't give a whit about his teaching. They simply wanted him there to be a publishing scholar. To be a publishing scholar is a valuable enterprise, but teaching is also an incredibly valuable enterprise. Baylor has always had a niche, And that niche, in large measure, has been the impact we've had on young people. We need a president who appreciates that history of Baylor and will continue to pursue that vision. Thank you.
Pastor Dagnall said this is kind of like the invitation at church, kind of one at a time here. Who would be next?
I'm Tommy Lou Davis, Classics Department and Honors College, and I want to ditto what my colleagues, my valued colleagues, Bob Baird and Ralph Wood said, and I don't have much to add, but I think that it's really important that the new president truly buys in and understands the mission of Baylor. It would be tragic if we if our next president tolerated our mission but didn't really understand fully what our mission is. And along those same lines, I think that it's very important, at least it is to me, that the next president really has a grasp of what the integration of faith and learning really means. And I think there's been some real misconceptions about that on our campus. And I think that a person's faith walk is very obvious in the way that they value and care about students. And so I hope that our next president has an understanding of the integration of faith and learning, and along with that has a real heart for students. It's very important to me that the faculty is happy and the staff is happy, but I also think that it's extremely important for Baylor to have a president that is approachable and that cares deeply about students.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Pennington. This is my 42nd year at Baylor. And I came here many years ago because there was the opportunity in my department, the chemistry and biochemistry now, but it was the Department of Chemistry at that time, to do teaching and research, 50-50, and was accorded that responsibility for the first portion of my career at Baylor, because Baylor has had the PhD program in chemistry and several other disciplines for over 50 years now. Research is not anything that's new to our department. And we've had the blessing the last several years of having people make national headlines as a result of their work in environmental chemistry, in forensic chemistry, and a second time around in environmental chemistry. And there are others who are on the forefront of cutting edge on protein folding, which is a very important enterprise in the area of biochemistry. So I speak to you as someone in a department which has over the years been highly recognized in the university for its publication. I would also point out that we've had visits from now the late Bob Perry, who was president of the American Chemical Society and a longtime editor in the Journal of the American Chemical Society, who came here for several years to teach. And he discovered something about our undergraduate students to cause him to speak in these terms, that Baylor undergraduate students are a national treasure. And I think that was partly brought about because some of our representatives from our department went to University of Utah, where he was a professor, and they performed in an outstanding manner. Some years ago, the Georgetown University published a report that brought Baylor a great deal of acclaim as well, and that was that that report suggested that among private PhD-granting institutions in the country, Baylor ranked number one in the number of our undergraduate students who went on for advanced degrees. That would be in law, medicine, dentistry, and a number of other allied health areas, also PhDs in a variety of areas, and in law. This again points to Baylor as a premier undergraduate teaching institution and is one of our greatest recruiting tools that we have for attracting students. In the middle of my career, I changed from primarily teaching and research to primarily teaching and shepherding the pre-med pre-dent program at Baylor. For 19 years, I served in that role before 3 years ago when I was asked to chair chemistry on an interim basis. During that time, my research program took a nosedive and has been virtually non-existent since the year 2000. I like to think that gifts that faculty have, perhaps many of us who are in the older generation of faculty and are not publishing at this point feel that maybe we're sort of like second-class citizens because of the new emphasis on research. I certainly feel that to a degree, but I'm very proud of the investment that I made in the undergraduate students who did go on for advanced professional degrees in medicine, dentistry, optometry, veterinary medicine, podiatry, and perhaps a few other allied health programs that I don't recall. But this is a very, very important enterprise, and it happens to be one of our biggest recruiting tools at Baylor is to have an outstanding commitment to pre-health. And this has been a long history for Baylor University. And I, again, would echo Dr. Baird's remarks earlier that the undergraduate teaching function of the university is extremely important. And it grieves me to a degree that we don't have frontline faculty members always teaching freshmen, juniors, sophomores, juniors, and seniors, but rather our introductory courses are going to lecturers. We've been very fortunate in chemistry of late, however, to hire some outstanding lecturers who are actually publishing as much as some of our faculty are because they were affiliated with our Welch Chair professor and have done a wonderful job at that. And I hope in our own discipline that we will maintain that level of excellence, but I still think that there's a great need to have the new president understand the gifts that people bring to the enterprise, whether it be administration or teaching or research. And I would wish for those people who got trapped in the middle, who came under a different regime, could have the opportunity for advancement on the basis of their excellence in teaching when they came in prior to the new research initiative. There are a group of people who are caught in that associate professor level who cannot go forward, and I believe that teaching should receive equal treatment to research. And yes, let's enforce the requirement that the new people coming in be held to that strict higher standard of publishing and teaching. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Pennington.
Hi, I'm Eric Robinson. I am in the Educational Psychology Department, and I remember doing this a few years ago. I was the chair of our Senate at the time, so I'm very happy that Georgia Green is doing that now and not me. So, good to see you up here. I know this is a listening session, but I was trying to think of questions to ask, but I'll try to, if you want to reply reply to my question embedded in this, that'd be great. But I'll try to word this in a way that you can reflect on it, I guess, in listening. You know, when I think about a president, we need someone who obviously is going to be a very good leader and have the ability to bring the constituent groups together, which I see as faculty, staff, students, alumni, faculty, and such. And so, you know, when I think about over the last several months, several months, we have had faculty, staff, students, alumni all ask for a stronger voice in making the decision to bring the president here, and we're rebuffed, I guess, is one way to word it. Didn't get quite the voice that they had all asked for. So I think, you know, an astute person coming in to be president is going to be fully aware of that and know that he or she has to try to bring these groups together when they didn't have a strong voice and being a participant in bringing that person to the campus. And so, you know, my question, I guess, for you to reflect on is how you're going to help that next leader overcome that barrier of not having much of a voice heard from the constituent groups that have asked for that voice. So that's what I have. So I hope you will think about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Diana, you and I did this not so long ago.
I'm Diana Vitanza. I'm in the English department. I appreciate very much what Ralph Wood said about the role of the new president in a larger religious community. I also want to say something about the academic side. I think it's very important because universities are unique institutions. Universities are not colleges. They're not corporations. They're not churches. And Baylor is a unique university. So it seems to me very important that whoever the new president is, that person needs to have experience, a depth of experience in dealing with educational institutions. And I would hope some knowledge, some deep knowledge about Baylor, because we're, I'm convinced, not like any other institution. So experience in an educational background, I think it's essential. I don't think you can bring someone in to a university whose experience has been corporate, religious, any other area. They're going to come in cold. They won't really know what kind of institution this is. So I think that's very important.
Diana, maybe I should have asked you this while you were here. What about previous or pre-existing relationship with Baylor or connection with Baylor? How important is that in understanding our unique culture and our unique traditions here? Sure, why not? Or anybody. I won't put Diana on the spot, but is that important? Is that essential?
given that the ethos here is unique, distinct.
You know, that's my thought too. It certainly would be helpful if the person had an understanding of Baylor, but the problem is if you just begin with that as a criterion, I think it's probably too limited because it could just eliminate other possibilities. I really do think, though, experience in higher education is crucial, that there have actually been some experience with the academy institution of education.
Dr. Baird, help me calibrate the difference between state versus private and then secular private versus Christian higher education.
I'm not quite sure what to say about that because I certainly think that there are those who have been in secular education who, because of their own background, do have an understanding of private education. So I don't think one could just say in the beginning, if somebody has not had experience in private education or church-related education, he or she wouldn't be a possibility. But I think in that case, one would have to take a hard look at the person's background to see if there is some understanding of religiously affiliated institutions. And I'm just certain that it's going to be part of the committee's task to see to what extent the person is, again, himself or herself, religiously committed individual, because obviously that's part of the mission of this person. I certainly would like to second what someone said earlier, faith and learning. Baylor has always been involved, it seems to me, in integrating faith and learning, but it is very important to see that that takes place in a myriad of that the new president understands that.
I can imagine a very good candidate being in religious education that never passed through Baylor's, either as an undergraduate. I think it would be helpful if they knew Baptist life, but putting a requirement that they have to have either a degree or experience from Baylor seems to me way overwhelming.
Anybody else on thoughts, have thoughts on that topic?
I do have thoughts in that direction. Bob Kreschwitz from the philosophy department. I would encourage the search committee to move in the direction of capacities and abilities rather than put a lot of restrictions on past experience. I mean, I think when you start with past experience, you quickly narrow the search pool and don't give folks some opportunities to prove that they can do what we want them to do. I would think the primary things we want, someone who can represent the university to a large number of constituents, articulate the vision of the university, and that carries over to fundraising, convincing folks that this is a place to invest their futures and the futures of their family and children and so forth as well. And then finally, I think selecting a leadership team to guide the university. We have a lot of wonderful folks here, and obviously someone who has experience with Baylor may have an advantage in gauging their leadership abilities. But someone from the outside can also bring, I think, folks who can help Baylor quite a bit. So I don't have any axe to grind against anyone who's here or against. I just think if we start from the capacities model as opposed to the experience model, we may be surprised. As far as the person's religious background, it does seem to me we want someone who is committed to the Christian religion and a deeply practicing Christian. It would be great, I think, if we could find someone in the larger Free Church tradition. But it may be we need to find someone who is committed to the Christian tradition and is prepared at Baylor to support the Free Church tradition. By that I mean the variety of Baptists, Methodists, other folks whose commitment has been for the last centuries to thinking of the church, the local congregation, as an intentional Christian community. And so I've found on the faculty at Georgetown College, where I taught for 21 years, and at Baylor, where I've been for 10 years, a number of folks I think would make great leaders and a great Christian. Sometimes they surprise me. They're not exactly what I was looking for. And so I just encourage the committee to be open in their search in that way.
Thank you. Yeah, Lynn.
Joe, could I just ask a question? Lynn Tatum, is it true that we are restricting the search to a Baptist? Because I'm following up on Bob's question. Isn't that part of the bylaws, or have I misunderstood that?
As a technical matter, Lynn, the way it works is our bylaws require all regents to be members of a Baptist church. The president, by his office, is an ex officio member of the Board of Regents. So that's the logic.
I think that that is a limiting factor. That was our experience last time. That's a very limiting factor, which goes back to we need to be careful about not putting too many other absolute you can't apply if you don't fit this criteria, because the Baptist will be a limiting factor.
Absolutely. Yes.
How would you interpret that if you found someone, say, in another evangelical tradition, but you know, they just live in a part of the country where there aren't too many Baptists, or all of them are weird or something?
Sure.
That goes to the experience, Mark.
I won't name parts of the country.
Yeah, I will rely on my billing this as a listening session, so I don't have to answer the question directly, but certainly interpretations beyond my scope of what I'm trying to do here, but you're right. I mean, there are people that may have been Baptist in their background, may have grown up Baptist. I mean, our past president was an ordained Baptist minister who happened to be an elder in the Presbyterian Church currently, and he had been in a part of the country where you and I might not feel real comfortable in the Baptist churches there. So that's a possibility that you could have that set of facts. I think it was a pretty unique set of facts that we had last time, and so beyond that, I just don't want to speculate or presume upon my fellow board members.
I'll speak from the microphone. As most of you know, I've been a long time. I'm Lynn Tatum. I teach in the Honors College in the Religion Department, and have been a long time advocate for AAUP principles. And so it'll surprise probably none of you that know me that I'm going to bring a couple of things forward very quickly. Number one, shared governance. It fits in with a lot of what's been said before, this concept of collegiality. The university was originally started in Europe essentially as a guild of teachers. And matter of fact, that's what the Latin universitas means, is sort of a guild of teachers, where we communicate, we talk, we work together. There are certainly important roles for the president to play. There's important roles for the board to play. There's important roles for the faculty to play. Those three issues have to balance out. And so that's one of the reasons I think it's important to get someone from academia, because nowhere else in society do we have that special concept of shared governance. Second point that I would make, of course, is academic freedom. By that, there is certainly, and let me back up to the previous point, I think we have had some problems in past administrations, and most of them fit under one of these two problems. This idea of shared governance. There were issues both with Dr. Lilly and Dr. Sloan on issues of shared governance. We don't want to have a presidency that would be deemed a failure. But the second point, academic freedom, I think it's important that we bring in a president that is non-ideological. Doesn't mean that he can't or she can't, okay, and I want to emphasize the she there, can't have her own views, but I think that what you will find most destructive to the family here is someone who tries to impose their ideology on the faculty or, God forbid, upon our students. We do have Catholic students. We also need to realize that we've got a very large population of Muslim students on campus as well, and now Hindu students. I think it's absolutely crucial that we not get anyone that is going to try to impose an ideology upon the campus. Third point, and you're probably tired of hearing this, this emphasis upon teaching. I mean, let's face the reality. We are a publisher parish university, and part of that comes from, and here I think I'm speaking to you that are board members, there is a perception that the board is I think, pushing for the administration to so emphasize research that I think there is a sense that teaching, good teaching, is not valued in the way that it used to be. And in fact, now it is, I think, absolutely clear that someone could be an absolute world-class teacher, a world-class teacher, and would not be given a tenure here at Baylor. So I think you need to be aware that there is a perception on campus, and you hear it all the time. We tell our new faculty members, you got to work on don't sponsor that group with the undergraduates. Don't work with this. Don't work on taking students overseas. You've got to get your publication record up, because that is the only thing, or that is the primary thing that's going to be going to be crucial in getting you a permanent position here. A fourth point is we need a president, and I think I'm going back to Diana Vitanza, that has academic respectability. I think Ralph Wood is correct in saying that we are playing on a larger stage. We need to be aware that there are certain people essentially academic respectability. Does he have to be an academic? We can point to one or two places. Let's take David Boren, who was one of the most distinguished senators in the South. Yes, he's a special case. But I think it's very important. It doesn't have to be an absolute restriction, but I think for the faculty, they're going to want someone who has academic experience. And let's take it even with David Boren, when he walks into a Big 12 president's meeting, he is immediately granted the respectability as a serious thinker in the American scene. Next point, and you're tired of hearing me talk, is it needs to be a uniter. Right now, we have gone through some real serious divisions on the campus. I think this goes back to the ideological issue that I referred to before. We need someone who can bring alumni and board, faculty from various factions together. I know it's a cliche, but we need a uniter, not a divider at this point. Someone, and I think that goes with that academic freedom, allowing people even with whom the president may disagree to teach and research. And a final point that I want to make is, and this is sort of a practical, for those of you in the audience, I was on the advisory committee in the last president, and there was a big emphasis in the search for the president. How can they support Vision 2012? How would they implement Vision 2012? We are now in 2009. By the time the president comes on campus, it will probably be something like about 2011, my guess is. So I think that there needs to be a stronger emphasis upon finding a president that can begin to articulate a vision that rather than emphasizing their ability to carry out the current vision, which we are getting close to the end of, that can enhance that vision, that can maybe think outside the box, so that the emphasis should not be, I would argue, on their ability to carry out a current vision, because I'm presuming we're looking for a president that's going to be here through 2030 or perhaps 2040. So I would encourage us to look for a president, going back to what Dr. Krushwitz said, that has abilities, the capability to look into the future and to think outside the box.
Can't let this go. So no ideology, Lynn, or no ideology that we're going to impose?
No, the latter.
Propose? May we propose ideology?
I think that would be devastating for a president to come in and say, this is my ideology, and I will promote, give pay raises, any way imply that to progress here at Baylor, you have to agree with the president's ideology. I think that's fundamentally destructive to the university.
And does Christian faith fall under your definition of ideology?
No. But, well, the board has said you don't have to be a Christian. And so let me be very careful how I pursue it. No, I believe a Jewish professor should be able to be hired here to teach about Judaism and to progress here at Baylor, because we have said, the board has said, that Jews are welcome on the faculty at the university. So in that narrow sense, if you understand, but no, I do not think that one has to be a Christian. That's a decision that was made 10 years ago. I think it is fair to say that one should be either Christian or Jewish. One should not be punished or in any way sanctioned for being a Jewish faculty member on Baylor campus. That's addressing the question, do they have to be, does the president need to impose Christianity upon faculty? I think as long as I think we have said very openly, no, you can be Jewish here and be a valued member of our community. But in that one restriction.
Thank you.
This last comment about ideology has caused me to make a comment, or want to make a comment. The word ideology typically has a very negative connotation. I mean, the word ideology frequently suggests a point of view that one is going to defend or impose on others, a point of view that's not open to criticism, a point of view that's not sometimes even rationally held. So I'm a little puzzled, I think, by Lynn's use of that word, and I think Mr. Arms may be concerned that we do want a president who has commitments and deeply held commitments, and I think the truth is to be a professor is to profess and to hold very strongly to some points of view. I think the academic community is intended to be a community where these points of view that are held with passion and commitment are nevertheless points of view that can be out on the table and open for critique and critical examination. And I think my colleague Lynn Tatum is really wanting to argue that we need to be a community that is open to critical investigation, and that we do want a president who undoubtedly will have his or her own commitments, but that we want a president who would be also committed to a community where free thought and discussion take place with regard to all of our passionate commitments. Is that fair, Lynn?
And I was using ideological in that pejorative sense of trying to impose improperly their views. I certainly believe presidents, any thinking person, is going to have their views. So, yes, I will accept that.
Baylor, we're seeking truth, and at the same time, we know the fount of all truth, and so there's a tension there.
Right.
Yeah, I do think a university with a religious commitment does live in a tense situation, but I think that very tension can be the foundation for growth and development. And so to say that on the one hand we have very deeply held commitments, but on the other hand we are really concerned that people be free to explore those commitments can create an environment that's very, very productive. I would probably, not probably, I'm sure I would go further than the Board of Regents wants to go, or maybe than many of the faculty would want to go, or alumni. I certainly think we need, if we're going to preserve our Christian identity, there's just no doubt that most of the professors who are hired here need to be people with Christian commitments. But we certainly in the past have hired people of Jewish faith, and as Ramiro said a moment ago, it goes without saying that if we hire somebody who's a Jew, that's certainly not going to be held against them in terms of promotion and so forth. I think we need to get to the point where we're secure enough in our Christian identity that we could have a Muslim faculty member or somebody of another religious persuasion. There certainly are Christian institutions. Notre Dame is an example. It certainly does have some faculty members of other religious persuasions, and I think our ability to do that can be a reflection of our security with regard to our own religious, specifically Christian, identity.
I just want to clarify. My issue is, you shouldn't receive promotion. Yes, we should be Christian or Jewish. But, and I'm really not even so much concerned entirely about religion. There can also be political ideology. There can be ideology towards the direction of where our culture is headed, the so-called culture wars. I think it will be destructive to the university if it is perceived that the president will promote give pay raises on the basis of factors that like that. You should be able to be a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian. Here I go farther. In the past, there's a sense that there has been an ideology, a particular view. I mean, one of the things that was referenced before, I think a particular view on faith and learning. There's a variety of views on integrating faith and learning, and all legitimate views, I might add. Dr. Krushwitz and I might disagree on what do we mean by integration of faith and learning. If we set up a situation where only one view of that people with one view of that get promoted or pay raises. That's the kind of ideology that I think is inimical to the university. I think it's great for us to have a robust discussion on the faculty.
Thank you.
I'm embarrassed to come forward second time, but I do think it's important if we are to maintain our direction toward a major research institution that it would really be helpful if we had someone who had governance experience at a major research institution. I think this would bring honor to the university. In our own department, we've been very successful in a recent chair search from a Tier 1 institution to lead our department in that direction. And I think such individuals deserve the opportunity to have someone from a Tier 1 institution or that level of experience and Christian commitment, and that narrows the field down very, very sharply. But we must be patient, I think, in seeking out that kind of leadership. I think that would be a really big plus, and it would energize the research enterprise, and I would hope also continue the emphasis on teaching as a very important function of the university. Thank you. My name is David Pennington.
Complexity may be an overused term, but we understand that Baylor is a very complex organization, and we'll need someone who can assume and handle those responsibilities. Should I start calling names?
I am not as old as I'm about to sound, but I think I've been through about 10 or 11 presidents in a 31-year academic career, so they come and go, and that counts some interims and so forth. My sense is you should not be expecting a president who comes in and makes us all proud about everything at Baylor. A really good president is someone who can grow and learn and come to appreciate the good things about this university, internalize them and articulate them well to others. And so I think it is our responsibility at Baylor to grow a good president. The past history of Baylor has been one of divisiveness, and that so we may not be good at it. But I think we have to start trying. I think it would be foolish to imagine there is someone out there that on every thing that has been mentioned today just rises to the top and is clear, would be a good sort of figurehead for that aspect of the university. This doesn't make your job easier, but it does mean I think you have to look really carefully at the ability of someone to grow and develop into what we hope will be a great president.
Trill, you're being requested. Not by me, mind you.
Wade Willett, psychology neuroscience. W.H. Auden said something like, the image of myself that I create, that I might love myself, is different than the image I would create that others might love me. False modesty is difficult to detect. Genuine humility is also difficult to detect. So in this process, I think we would probably all agree that we're looking for someone who's more humble than self-serving, arrogant, and yet that quality is particularly difficult to detect through even interview or CV, resume, that sort of thing. It's going to take probably a astute observation of past behavior, someone who is comfortable in a service capacity, sweeping the floor, for example, and has risen through the ranks. That would be a very good indication. I don't know if Baylor will ever be a place where people of all world religions can teach on the faculty, but I think that if we're going to be serious about religion, and I'm not in the religion department, I think we need to consider that possibility. I've had people from other universities say to me, you know, Baylor's very serious about religion. How can you be so serious about religion without having more representation from other faith perspectives, from individuals who are down on the playing field as Muslim or Jew or Hindu, like we are on, as Christians down on the playing field doing our work? I don't have an answer to that question. I don't know how that would work within different departments. But I think to be on the world stage, world religion is certainly very important. And then third and last, someone who will inspire all constituent groups. And I know as faculty, looking at someone's CV and seeing someone who would be a slam dunk for tenure, for example, would be inspirational to me. Someone who has credentials in the classroom, in the lab, or in a studio, or on stage. And also someone who has extraordinary service abilities and committed as service, and then collegiality again. I think that's extraordinary and crucial for the person to be a good colleague. To be able to say dissent is important, that we disagree, but do that in a collegial way, that's very important.
I hate to push myself to the front of the line again, but since no one else is speaking, I would like to say something about process. I think to some extent, when looking for the president, we're starting a little bit behind the schedule, partially if we're looking for a tier one type of president, basically someone who has that level of ability is frankly going to be find it unusual for there not to be faculty representation on the actual search. Typically that happens at a very high level at tier one universities. Rice would not, which is one of the reasons why the faculty advocated for that. In one way, I would encourage you to overcome that. In the past, the advisory committee was relegated not to being able to do their own inquiries. If you're getting someone in higher education,
One of the reasons that we should have faculty on the search committee is when it gets to that final point where the candidate has signed off on, you not only can contact my references, but you can contact whoever you want on the campus or in my organization. I would very much encourage you to have, say, Georgia in that process. The kind of questions that an academic can ask, the kinds of questions, she's the representative of the Faculty Senate, I would encourage you at that last level to have, or all of our faculty representatives, very much involved at that final stage, talking, finding out what their experience is, how have other faculty interacted with this person if they're coming from higher education. I think that's that will enhance our ability to identify an excellent candidate that can be successful in an academic environment.
Certainly don't want to cut off any opportunity for anyone, but also want to be respectful of your time. So if there's nothing more. Yes, Lynn.
Could you at all address timetables? Do you have any at all?
Really don't. I mean, this is intended to be the beginning so that we can synthesize the information that we gather through these listening sessions to create a profile, which will then allow us to call for nominations, which would then result in working to shortlist, so we're very early on, and we don't feel that we're under any pressure for time, and so our goal is to be thorough and to do a good job, so we're not really even at the point yet where we've sketched out a schedule. And if not, thank you again for your time and your input. We really appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you at the next session as well. Thank you.